thanks very much. I feel after Awolema has said that I'm essentially speaking for one particular and much maligned area of the service economy, that of the journalist. Obviously, we have no real skills. We fill a niche, and that niche changes at the behest of the market, so we have no real control over our destiny. So, not that different from working in a burger bar. I think the idea of non-destructive creation counterposed to creative destruction is a really interesting one. Part of the problem with it, though, that I perceive is one of expectation, which is that a lack of anticipated growth is actually as bad as a reduction for many businesses. That their modelling systems, their assumptions about the future are built around the idea that the thing they do now will continue to be a source of profit and indeed increasing source of profit. And even if the innovations don't replace them completely, even if the aeroplanes don't completely replace the bicycle, the number of bike journeys diminishes or doesn't grow as anticipated, and that causes problems. And this sort of issue is one that has faced us for many, many years. When printing with movable type was introduced into Europe by Gutenberg and refined in the UK by Caxton, there was a revolution, and it severely affected the job prospects of monks and people making illuminated manuscripts. And indeed, I don't believe you can find a single decent scriptorium in the whole of Amsterdam these days, which just shows how some things do go away eventually. You want an illuminated manuscript done, you're going to have to travel a long way. But the revolution that initiated, the printing and movable type initiated, was one that gave us the Reformation, the Enlightenment, the Industrial Revolution, and laid the ground for what I believe is a current transformation of the way we construct human society, of the way we live. Because our science-based technologies, like the processor, the internet, all those sorts of things, have allowed us to engage in technology-based science. Craig Venter's and his team's ability to replicate the entire genetic code of an organism industrially is an example of that sort of technology-based science. It would not have been possible without very powerful computers. And this may, in many respects, create a virtuous circle, one which catapults us into a new era. It could even help us solve some of the big problems that have faced us as a species as we occupy more and more of the biosphere and realise that the activities of the human species do have an effect on the world as a whole. Obviously, the planet is not in any danger from our activities, just its hospitability to us. We may not be able to survive here much longer if we're not careful. Another thing that may not end up surviving very much longer is, of course, the printed newspaper. Those of you from the UK may like to know that today the Times, with Murdoch's News Corporation, showed off its new website. You'll be going behind a paywall in 4 weeks, the Times and Sunday Times. You'll be expected to pay £1 a day for the Times or £100 a year. It looks very nice, it looks very pretty, and the great experiment begins next month when you take this printed newspaper. Take the online edition of the printed newspaper, put it behind a paywall, and hope that you can make money out of it. It's a desperate throw of the dice by someone who understands newspapers and doesn't seem to understand the internet. Personally, I don't think it will succeed unless a rabbit is pulled out of the hat, unless something more interesting is done with the content behind the paywall. But, you know, I'm willing to observe and see, and if it works, no doubt other people will follow the model. It would be interesting, though, to see what effect its success or failure, the success or failure of that model, has on the overall idea of the newspaper, and indeed the overall idea of print. Because for the past 500 years or so, printed books and pamphlets, and then newspapers and magazines, have done a lot of what you might call the heavy lifting in the trade in ideas around the world. They spread new theories and doctrines, they spread ideologies around and offer their services to religious and the irreligious, to the scientists, to the prophets, to those who would advocate social change, to those who would be conservative in their political views. And analogue electronic media, in the form of television and radio, have played their part in as well. Television in particular has become very, very important and significant as a way of making the news available to people, spreading information about the world. Of course, we should reflect that both television and radio news still, by and large, at least in the UK, take their agenda from the agenda set by the print media. And the fact is that printed newspapers still maintain a particularly special place in the hearts and the minds of the intellectuals. They are opinion formers, they are seen as being significant. And we may, however, be living in the last days of the newspaper. Print is being replaced by digital distribution. Many of us have smartphones that are perfectly capable of displaying the news. Network-based forms of expression are becoming more and more important as a way of spreading ideas, of sharing information about what's happening, of building communities. And network-based forms of news allow for engagement, they allow for comment, they allow for involvement in a much deeper way than print has ever been capable of. In the past, you could write letters to the editor and hope that they would be printed. Mostly they weren't. Now, if a newspaper has an online presence, you can comment on its blog pages, you can interact, and in fact, you can just set up your own online space to have the discussion without necessarily having the permission or indeed the engagement of the original source of the news. Bytes have replaced glyphs, have replaced letters as the primary carriers of data in this increasingly networked world, and we're beginning to see the consequences of this revolution because old media forms are shrinking and shriveling before our eyes. We heard in the previous session about how entertainment television, about how populist television is being challenged by the affordances of the online world and forced to rethink it and reinvent itself. Some years ago, I used to do a lunchtime seminar for staff at the BBC called The Future of Television. I presented it a number of times to a number of different audiences, and I would stand up and at the start and say, this is a talk about the future of television. It's a very short talk. We don't have one. And I would sit down, and we would have a conversation. Because the fact is that linear broadcast television, whilst it remains very popular, is fundamentally challenged by what the network can do. This weekend in Europe, we have the Eurovision Song Contest, a very good example of a live television event that for the last 4 years has been streamed over the internet, that now relies for a lot of its interest on what happens online around that live event. And where very, very few of the people that I know who will be watching Eurovision will only have one screen in front of them. And they may have it on the television, but they will certainly have a laptop or a smartphone or some other device to allow them to interact and engage with. And the old idea of linear television is challenged. Newspapers have it significantly worse. The crisis facing the newspaper industry is a real and desperate one, and has been for many years. Despite the arguments from the old media professionals who believe they can find a way to resuscitate their dying industry, it has to be recognised that the business model that has sustained the ability to put ink on dead trees and then ship it around the country no longer works in many cases. That's because the business model relied on getting revenue from subscribers or from individuals who paid for the newspaper, but also from advertising. The advertising underpinned the journalism, made the journalism possible. And whilst there was a separation, church and state, between the advertising department and editorial, which is respected, without the advertising income from classified and display, newspapers did not make financial sense. They would be too expensive for people to buy them and not be published. And advertising, as we know, is moving online. And it's moving online into places that do not then pay for journalism. Google takes its cut, but does not pay for the journalists. And the amount of money that is available online, although it is increasing, does not seem to be as much for a particular publication or a particular accumulation of material as was available in the old days. This is inevitable. The fact is that much newspaper advertising works much better when it can be presented as a live, active database that can be searched. If you're looking for a job, then what you want is an online service which will alert you when jobs that fit your profile become available and email you. You want an ability to upload your CV. You want the automatic tools and services. That simply cannot be done in print. And with services like Craigslist offering many forms of advertising for nothing as a public service because it's so cheap to do it online, you also have the problem that the thing you want to charge money for is available freely and reasonably effectively elsewhere. You also have the issue that some forms of advertising are now seen as a marketing employ biopic. This decline, I think, is happening and it's real. Newspapers have been so profitable for so long that they have been able to continue. And many of us, and I include myself in this, are incredibly fond of the newspaper as a form. I like papers. I may have the Guardian app on my iPhone. I may look at the New York Times website on my other computers. That doesn't mean I don't buy and enjoy the newspaper. But printed newspapers and magazines, and I think broadcast television and radio, seem to me to have peaked as our primary tools for sharing news and opinion. Books are already being superseded in many areas. There's a very interesting book about, I appreciate the irony of this, very interesting book about to be published next month by Nick Carr, who wrote Does IT Matter some years ago, called The Shallows. And it's about how the world of Google and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter changes the way we think, changes our mental processes because of the essential plasticity of the human brain, and I recommend reading it. But many of you will choose to read it online and on screen because it will be easier to get hold of it than to have the physical book in your presence. Interactive services, easy online publishing, the Twitter that fills this space, even though we can't see it, all play their part in changing the way that we acquire knowledge of things out there and changing the structures through which that information is presented to us, made sense of, assimilated, absorbed, and adapted to. The things we collectively believe to be true about the world, the news, are now mediated principally by electronic mechanisms, even if the final delivery may, for many of us, still be in print. And we find out about the world increasingly from blogs and Twitter, from Facebook. And of course, interestingly, from the many meetings and bars and cafes and conferences like this one that these tools make possible. Some time ago, and I can't remember the origin of the quote, a US student said that he didn't bother reading newspapers anymore or watching television because he expected the news to come to him. He would hear about it on Facebook or Twitter. This was 2 or 3 years ago, and I laughed about it at the time. And then I realised that increasingly I rely on Twitter and the people I follow on Twitter to let me know what's interesting. That they point me to the things as they happen, and I then jump to the things they refer to instead of spending time surfing myself. This is a problem, and it's often portrayed as a crisis for journalism, but it isn't. Journalism and newspapers aren't the same, and a crisis for newspapers is not a crisis for journalism, only for the type of journalism that newspapers practice. Television and radio news have their own crisis as well. But again, it's not the death of TV news, it's that new ways of finding things out, new ways of discovering information are emerging, and the old forms of media are going to have to adapt. Some may not adapt very well. Journalism in particular is expensive, newspaper journalism is very expensive, and whilst it has up to now been paid for through advertising, or because it's seen as a necessary if unprofitable side of running radio station or a television station to get a wide general audience, that consensus is breaking down. But a society's need for journalism, if you understand a society's need for journalism is the task of discovering and making information available to all, doesn't determine the means by which that should be carried out. The machinery of journalism is only loosely coupled to the practice of journalism. And whilst different technologies and their capabilities will determine what forms of journalism are more and less easy or profitable, it's important that we keep the two things separate. And instead of focusing on the problem as being a problem for news journalism generally, we should allow it to be a problem for newspapers, perhaps radio news, perhaps television news, but step backwards and ask ourselves a more interesting question, which is, where does the need for journalism come from? What problems in industrial society had journalism as their solution? And do those same problems exist in the network society? Rather than just assuming that journalism is a good thing, you know, I'm tempted to assume that because it's my way, but rather than assuming that, let's step back and ask a different question. Why do we have journalism in the first place? I think the answer to that is that in complex industrial society, in the industrial society that has emerged in the West over the last 200 years and is infecting the rest of the world, in Information flows are complex. Secrets are easy to keep. Corruption is simple. And there is a need to keep a track of things. And the practice of journalism, as it emerged, around the discipline of reporters and commentators and editorial standards and all those things, grew up at the same time as it became possible to make to do the mass distribution of newspapers and then to use electronic media to get messages across. And the two became linked in our imagination. There was a problem that was solved by newspapers. There was a problem that was solved by network news. There was a problem which is solved by the world service on the radio. But perhaps some of those problems go away in the network world. Perhaps what we call citizen journalism is in fact just a derogatory term for the fact that information can flow more easily in society now. That any one of us with a camera phone can take a photograph, can post on Twitter, can write a blog post, can get out there. That in those societies where access to the network is affordable and available to the majority, the thing that journalism thought it was doing no longer has to be done that way. In emerging societies, newspapers are still sold because the technology is not available. That's fine. That doesn't devalue this argument if you did support it. But there is a point in the emergence of the network society where the need for journalism shifts. And if the EU digital agenda is successful, then that point will be accelerated and will be brought forward within Europe. And we will have to think differently about what it is we do when we do journalism. The digital revolution has given us a globalised economy, which is why we should not be worried about what's currently happening in the Eurozone, or the Krakow zone, as somebody called it. We have low or even zero cost ways of collecting and distributing information, a range of tools that would surprise even the most imaginative science fiction writer from back in the 1970s or earlier. So it's hardly surprising that the business of journalism has been transformed. Most of us have the capabilities to be eyewitness reporters, to challenge professional journalists in every way. And this is a good thing because it allows stories to be assembled and made available in new and innovative ways. And some old media companies are adapting very well in this world. They are trying very hard to be relevant. But it's hard for them to make it clear how they're going to make money doing that. And this is where we have the problem. Certainly for somebody from my generation, of my age, the journalistic forms that I grew up with, I like. They work for me. The ways I think about the world have been shaped by them. And there is a newspaper-shaped space in my understanding of reality. I'm not sure that space exists in my children's heads in the same way. And I'm not sure that it should. The technology-powered wave of creative destruction that swept through the newsrooms and the editing suites is crashing now at the boardroom doors. The business models for newspapers are under threat. We see this particularly in the United States, but it's also true throughout Europe. The innovators aren't just competitive businesses either, and it's not that they're sort of destructive creation possible as well. Everyone with a cell phone and a blogger account is potentially a threat to a newspaper. Every online advertising source is a revenue source god. It's the reason why News Corporation in the UK is so angry with Google, is so threatening to the whole model of the internet, because they realise that the world they knew, the one in which they made profits, has changed. But I don't think we should mourn the passing of the newspaper. I'll miss it when it goes. I think it is going to go. But we should instead ask, what function did newspapers perform at their peak? And are we in need of something similar in the new world? If there's no space for the newspaper, then we should let it go. We will have a need for something else. I don't actually know what it is yet. And it'll be fascinating to see as this network society shapes up where the gaps are. What are the things that somebody with my set of skills can usefully earn a living at? It may be nothing.